Hi, I'm Laura Laker, and you're listening to the Wheel Suckers podcast.
Today we're talking to Laura Laker about cycling journalism, e-bikes, shorthand, and lindy hopping.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
The Wheel Suckers podcast is forged in the studios of Wardour and the flippin' fantastic Fitzrovia, London. One does not simply record podcasts at Wardour, they also do voiceovers and original music composition. Let their professional team of engineers, producers and composers be your guide. Visit wardourstudios.co.uk for more. Hi, I'm your captain, Alex. I look after social media marketing and events at Look Mum No Hands, a cycle cafe bar workshop. On 49 Old Street, London, we serve coffee, bikes, beer, food, and I'm joined by my stoker.
Jenny the Stoker, right in the back of the tandem. I am the director of the London Bike Kitchen. We teach people to fix their own bikes through classes, drop-in sessions, and our Women and Gender Variant and Women of Colour nights.
We have a guest in the studio. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Do you want to introduce yourself? Is that how we want to do it now?
Yeah. Introduce yourself.
So I'm...
Who are you?
Who are you?
Who am I? That's a good question. Who are any of us? So I'm Laura Laker. I am a cycling journalist. I tell people that I write about transport mainly, which I do. So I'm interested in walking and cycling, active travel, safer roads, cleaner air, a better planet, better cities, better world. Thumbs up.
Mm. Do you write about cars ever?
Do I?
It's not allowed.
Ooh. They're on your radar?
Yes, they are. Yes, I do. I guess in the context of air pollution and road danger and sentencing from time to time. And funnily enough, I grew up in quite a car, I guess, like enthusiast household. My dad was an amateur racing driver as a young man. So we had all these broken down old cars up the driveway. It looked like a sort of junkyard with all these like bits of scrap metal. And my dad was one of those people who just collected stuff and didn't throw it away. So he was always tinkering with engines and taught me how they worked. When I was a kid, I remember him drawing a picture of pistons and the cam drive and how everything worked. And yeah, he taught me about that and beer. And the only thing I think I was interested in was the engines. So I was quite into cars for a while.
Wow.
Yeah, and driving, yeah.
I remember you had a great story about how you got into bikes, was it? That you told at Look Mum No Hands a while back.
Yes, so we grew up in this semi-junkyard-looking house in an old tumble-down cottage in Somerset, and we lived on quite a fast road. It was a quiet road mainly, but when people came past, they came past very quickly. And we had a number of animals who would move in with us just... obviously had a sign on the gate that only the creatures could see, and they would just come and turn up at the door, these stray cats, straggly looking cats, and we would look after them, and they would move in with us. Anyway, from time to time, we'd lose a cat to the road outside, and I love animals and always have, and I always thought, you know, how ridiculous it is that we use cars so much. I guess I was a bit of a strange kid. I wrote this long poem about how we should not use cars as much, and well, it would be better if we just drove around on horses. And I guess my thinking around that has stayed fairly the same, apart from I like bicycles now instead. So
the iron horse.
It's a bit more practical, a little bit more practical than keeping a horse in a city. So, yeah, I've always loved the environment. And I think I saw the car as a kind of useful tool, but it gets to the point where it starts to damage us, damage the places we live and make the roads less safe. And so that's kind of been my quest, I think, to kind of change people's thinking around that and to get more cycling, because it makes so much sense for short journeys. Makes the world a better place.
Amen.
What was your journey then from maybe there to where you are now, if you're a cycling journalist?
Yeah, it's quite a long journey. So I guess...
We've buckled up. We're ready.
Brought food.
Brought snacks. Yeah. Got water.
So, yeah, I guess... Gosh, where do I start? So, yeah, I've always cared about the environment, but didn't really know what I wanted to do for a kind of long time. I finished school at 15 and I had to go and do A-levels. So I basically chose, I mean, I'd been moved up a year in school. My sister used to teach me when we were in primary school. She taught me everything she learned in the first year. And so I skipped the first year. Anyway, come the end of school, I had to go to college and sort of pick things at random, basically. I literally flipped a coin for one of my classes. Didn't know what I wanted to take. And then... barely turned up. I was quite naughty, really. Barely turned up to my classes, didn't turn up to one of my exams at the end, and came out with like 1D. And I'd sort of moved out of home in the meantime, moved out of home at 16.
Were you rebelling?
And, yeah, I mean, I kind of was, yeah. And I've always been very independent and I guess single-minded. And I had all these random jobs and I'd always get fired because I wouldn't turn up or I wouldn't agree with the management. I was very sort of, I was probably a massive pain in the ass, to be honest. And yeah, so anyway, it got to the point where I thought, you know, I've got to do something with my life. And I was, you know, grand old age of 18. And so I went back to college, rediscovered my love of the environment and it was sort of diversion via nutrition. I thought I'd be a dietitian for a while. I thought, you know, I can make the world a better place by helping people be healthier. And then, yeah, anyway, that kind of, I realised I was far too sensitive to be working with sick people in hospitals. And then took a journalism, finished my degree, I moved to London, switched unis, took a journalism course after uni, and then did an internship with the London Cycling Campaign. They contacted my journalism school. So, and then I went and did some work there, and I just started cycling in London at the time. So I was riding around the streets, loving that and loving the freedom of the bicycle. And I'd been cycle touring for the first time, loved that. And yeah, I just saw cycling and writing about cycling as a way to kind of marry my love of the environment and find something that was meaningful for me that I could stick with. And that's all I wanted to write about after that. So I kind of became obsessed with making the world a better place through cycling. And yeah, that's kind of whistle stop.
Impressive. Off. As a journalism school question, you write in shorthand.
I do, yeah.
And it looks amazing. And yeah. But I'm wondering if you can talk about what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of magical language that we learn at journalism school. Yeah, I love journalism school. It was this sort of 6-month, very intense course, and it takes up all your time. And you have to do the shorthand. You have to learn that in, I think, 18 weeks. It was the thing I was the best at, to be honest. I mean, I was always making errors in news writing, and it took me a long time to get the sort of concentration to check all the, because they give you really difficult spellings of names and stuff and try and trip you up. But the shorthand I absolutely loved. So we had this amazing teacher called Angela, and she was like a school teacher, and she'd set us down and she'd be like, right, this is how we do it. This is A, this is B. And so shorthand works, or the T line that I learned, it's kind of, so you have an outline, they call them, for each letter, and you write phonetically. And so about is A, B, T, and it's all sort of joined together. So it looks like one kind of outline. But the A is just a sort of small diagonal line. The B looks like a number 6, and the T is a kind of horizontal line midway between the two lines. Yeah, yeah. And then a D is on the horizontal line and the bottom of the line. So anyway, people are always fascinated by it because it looks a bit like hieroglyphs when you've done it. And I've been writing a lot, and I was doing a lot of diaries at the time, so I could write very quickly. And so, yeah, I picked that up and I absolutely love it. Yeah, it's a really fun skill to have, and it's super useful if you're interviewing someone on the phone and you can just scroll what you're writing.
Yeah. And someone, I guess, if you're opposite them and you could be writing stuff and they don't know
you're writing anything about them.
Yeah. Liar. Yeah, I'll put a link below because you did that brilliant tweet a while back to us. And yeah, I was like, it looks like the Pokemon Unknown, if anybody knows it. But they just, it didn't make any sense.
I know, it wouldn't.
Great.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I did actually invent my own sort of shorthand when I was a kid because I didn't want my sister reading my diaries. And yeah, it was not as sophisticated as T-Line, obviously. But yeah, it's something that I've always quite liked, is sort of mysterious writing. Yeah.
It's cool. Mm. It's cool.
We'll get back on the road again.
So I guess we want to lead into talking about this interview
Yes.
and how you held your composure. Do you mind explaining a bit more about the interview?
So, yeah, the BBC called me up and said, can you come on tomorrow morning? And this was the weekend. And it's kind of a great opportunity in a way to try and change people's thinking around what cycling is and what it could be. And I think as a woman and someone who's fairly kind of reasonable when they're speaking is, I don't know, it probably comes across better than if I were maybe more of a typical cyclist, in inverted commas, like a guy, and I don't know, wearing some weird bright clothing. And so, yeah, it's happened a few times now. And I was asked on Sky, and they were far worse. I mean, I thought the BBC people were quite reasonable by other standards. Because I've been on Sky before and they have put, I didn't realise at the time until afterwards, they would put killer cyclists in a banner under my face on the screen.
I remember you posting the picture of that and it was like, my God.
And
killer cyclists.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hilarious, obviously. I mean, it's not, if you remove it from the obvious seriousness of the situation, it's almost like you're being trolled on TV. And it almost, I don't know, at first it's quite overwhelming, but actually it becomes almost enjoyable because it's almost just like a game, really. And journalism, one of the things that you learn at journalism school is, you know, make things emotive. And it's one of the things that I've always felt uncomfortable about because I studied a science at university and feel very strongly about, you know, being accurate and being fair and being balanced, but that's not what gets the clicks or the views or the comments. And that's kind of, there's a whole other story around how sort of news is going and and how we discuss certain topics in the news because it gets clicks or makes people upset or angry. And so for me, it's about being in that situation and being able to separate yourself from the emotive language and just get the facts across and to be reasonable and not to sort of rise to, you know, not to feed into these ideas of cycling being this dangerous, subversive thing and just being something very positive and normal, potentially. And, and it's about sort of hopefully changing some people's minds. If you know, they might see me and think, oh, yeah, I can see what she means, actually. And she looks fairly reasonable and isn't shouting at anyone or isn't getting, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of the quest. And, it can be tricky, though, if you're on live TV. But it's amazing what adrenaline does, actually. You can, it makes you think on your feet.
Sometimes you actually used the adrenaline to help you. Is it a matter of experience, though? Feeling it again and being like, I've got this energy now. Yeah, I know how to channel it.
I think so. Yeah, the first few times I could sort of almost hear my heart thumping and I had a little microphone on my top and I was wondering if that was picking it up because it felt so loud. I was really, because it's terrifying. You're on live TV. If something goes wrong, then it's, you know, there's, I don't know how many people watching, but yeah, you just have to sort of try and, for me, it's about focusing on the facts and having points that I want to make and not sort of being sidetracked by, oh, but shouldn't cyclists all, you know,
be
whatever.
Licensed.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tricky one. And I think, I don't know, I think those prejudices that people have about cyclists, they both come from and are and feed into newsreaders, journalists' prejudices and how they then speak about and write about cycling and cyclists. And so it's a tricky one. I try and be, you try and be a voice of reason, but it's a hard one to change people's mindsets because it's so easy to get people riled up about people on bikes in this country. It seems to be an English-speaking country thing. It's similar in the US. It's worse in Australia. Mm-hmm. In Europe, of course, people are just people. And, you know, sometimes you ride a bike, sometimes you drive a car, sometimes you walk, and it's no big deal. But I don't know.
It seems to be a real, not issue, but the news seem to just want to gun for those kind of articles when they can.
It's an easy target,
Statistically speaking, there are so many more road deaths with pedestrians and people on motorbikes. Mm. You just don't hear about that at all.
You mean people killed?
People killed, yeah.
Pedestrians. And
it's like that's been normalized people accept, the news accepts it. But then when anything happens with a cyclist, it's like, easy target, minority group.
Yeah.
Bam, like.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. And it's really damaging to the cause of making our streets safer, unfortunately. And politicians do listen to this stuff and they see, oh, the Daily Mail doesn't like cyclists. What are they going to do if we decide to spend the £10 a head that we know, we've known for a decade that we need to spend per head per year on cycling in order to start getting a cycling culture in this country? And that's the sort of minimum. But yeah, it just takes someone with the sort of political will and who understands how important it is and how potentially beneficial. But it's hard to see through those headlines, see past those headlines and all of the feeling that they stir up, because, yeah, there's not many things that get people riled up like cycling. It's amazing.
I wanted to talk about your recent article in The Guardian, which was, should we stop using the word cyclist? Mm-hmm. I think it's a larger issue, isn't it, rather than just the word.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, so I think cyclist is a kind of byword for transgressive road user sometimes. Naughty person, red light jumper, pavement rider.
It's got those connotations.
Yeah. But yeah, and it's something that I've thought for quite a few years now. But yeah, as you say, it's a wider issue, really. And I think if we focus on that, then we risk losing the bigger point. And like you say, a lot of people are killed on the roads every year, around 1,700 roughly per year. Many of those are pedestrians. Many of those are on motorbikes. Motorcyclists are the most vulnerable road user that we have in this country. Of course, the common denominator all too often is motor vehicles. So cars in urban areas, lorries disproportionately represented. And yeah, we're not really having that conversation in a sort of grown up and real way, unfortunately. And I think that we're quite immune to road danger when it comes from motor vehicles, because people use the word accident and they say, oh, the car went out of control. And it's almost as if there's no human agency. There's no person behind that, in inverted commas, accident. You know, it's a collision. It wasn't an accident. It was someone's choice to drive, all too often, to drive dangerously or to speed. And you hear some horrible stories about things that happen on pedestrian crossings and children and all of these things, and they don't get half of the attention that we get in the papers when someone kills someone if they're riding a bike or hurts someone or acts dangerously if they're riding a bike. And any road death, of course, is awful. But yeah, we're just not proportionate in the way that we look at that. So yeah, I think we need a sort of bigger conversation about, you know, where the road danger is coming from, where the air pollution is coming from, where the congestion is coming from, because all of this is being put onto cyclists at the moment from some quarters. And it's absolute nonsense, obviously. It's just, yeah.
Do you think that comes from the fact that a lot of these people who are car users are the majority of people?
Yeah.
In a way, or people identify as being a driver.
Yeah.
And then they put themselves in that person's shoes, and they're like, oh, but I know what it's like. And
yeah,
those exactly. Cyclists, they just come out of nowhere. Yeah. And it's not their fault. And that's why it falls in the court.
Yeah.
Like people, they say it's careless, not dangerous driving, and no one gets prosecuted.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And the distinction between dangerous driving and careless driving is so sort of vague anyway. It's driving that falls below a certain standard or far below a standard of a careful and competent driver. And yeah, you're totally right. People who are on juries think, you know, it's basically that there, but for the grace of God go I, you know, accidents, inverted commas, happen. We all sometimes look at our phone at the wheel. And I think that we just accept that this happens, and it shouldn't be accepted. You know, driving a car is one of the most dangerous things that most of us will ever do. And yet we sort of treat it so lightly. And that does need to change. And the way that the court system treats those deaths is not serious enough and doesn't send out a message of the seriousness of driving. And I was always taught as a kid, because my dad was so into cars and racing, but he was so sort of, he was very, very kind of careful about driving on the roads. And he was always like, you know, just assume everyone's going to be a dangerous driver. Just don't, you know, don't take any risks. Don't get in a car with someone who's driving badly. And it kind of sowed this seed in my mind of, you know, this doesn't have to be, you know, people have a choice how they use their vehicles. So maybe that's what made me see it differently. But yeah, certainly as a society, it's all kind of a bit messed up, really.
Do you have any ideas on how these changes could be implemented? Because I'm thinking of things like the smoking campaign or drink driving sort of thing.
I think there's a big educational piece to be done, definitely. I think people don't seem to realise what kind of dangers their cars pose. I've become an annoying neighbour, and where I live, I go outside and I ask people to turn off their engines because I have a very sort of sensitive smell and I just can't stand the smell of diesel. And people sit outside the, sometimes outside the window, and I can't help myself. So I go out and I ask them to turn off their engines, and it's amazing the response. People don't realise that it's an issue, don't think it's an issue.
Isn't it illegal?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, running your car for a minute or more, there's fines that you can, but nobody's ever checking. No, like the council's never checking. But yeah, one guy was like, "Oh, modern cars don't pollute." And which is, he's driving a petrol engine. It's like, wow. Another guy, he's in like a tow truck, a commercial tow truck. He said, move out of London if you don't like it. There's other cars on the street. There's just a road over there. There's cars on it. It's just people don't understand. And I just think, you know, it's amazing. Why don't we tell people this? Why aren't we advertising the fact that idling is like a part of the problem, that you're car is part of the problem and your behavior is impacting other people's health? And if people don't understand that very basic fact, then we've got a very long way to go. I'd really like to see speed cameras. I'm a big fan of speed cameras. Of course, that's like the Daily Mail would have a field day if we started introducing those en masse. But you know, people speeding, just catch them, just don't speed. You know, if you speed, that's, yeah, that's up to you. But, you know, face the points.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, if someone drives dangerously, you know, take away their license.
You need a slap, more than a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. I just think, you know, take away people's licenses if they show that they're not, they're not sort of capable of driving safely.
Yeah.
They're not responsible enough, because people's lives are at stake. You hear these horrible stories about people like hurting multiple people on the roads. They've got like a lot of points in their license, and yet they claim hardship and they're still allowed to drive. And yeah,
in this country, do you get retested, or is it you pass your driving test and you're done?
You're
set for life.
Yeah, you pretty much pass, and then I think it's when you get to 70 you'll have an eye test.
That's
and
a long time.
Yeah, so until you're 70,
yeah, it's
unless
pretty
you
bad.
Yeah, unless something happens, unless you crash into something, then yeah, you get to
retesting.
Yeah,
every
10 years would be good.
And then reminding people of the,
I think people know. I think people know what they're supposed to be doing. It's like when I was studying dietetics, it's like people know what they should be eating. They just don't do it. There's no immediate benefit.
Yeah.
So they're just
it'll
like,
be all right.
Oh,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I'm just
me.
One person.
Not me.
I just drive
not
10
me.
Miles
other
over
people,
the
not me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's other people, yeah. Because everyone thinks they're slightly better than the norm. So, yeah, I think people's perception. But what has been shown to be effective is sort of zero tolerance policing. So, you know, if you're going to lose your license, if you're naughty on the roads, then you're not going to be naughty. So, yeah, I'm all for that. Yeah.
Just stop cutting our police forces.
Yeah, I know that's the thing. Yeah, we don't have enough police anymore.
I was like, we're just going to get into too
stretched.
Much of a...
It's a huge...
Fucked.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm being like a... Like very sort of... Serious, and
it's a serious issue.
It is a serious issue.
Serious
I feel strongly
issue.
About it. Yeah,
I just watched this mini documentary about this guy in New York, because it's the idling is an offense in New York City as well, but they allow regular punters to go out and submit information when a car is idling, and you get a cut of their fine.
Wouldn't that be great? I love
they
that.
Should totally.
I would be on idling to trot.
Get a tasty few little £5.
No, this guy
on
made
a Friday.
How much did he make? Like $9,000?
Hell yeah.
He was retired, wasn't
year?
He? And he was just like, I love the way he approached people. He's just like he's just sort of very matter of fact and calm, and then he's just taking his commission.
That could be you. You could be getting some money
God.
For
we should post that little mini doc.
Become an
we'll put a link below to that. Yeah,
it was, yeah, that's a pretty cool video.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I like it.
Let's go into more positives. Mm. What's been your favourite interview so far?
I interviewed Jenny Graham. Do you know Jenny Graham?
Yeah,
she's one of the co-founders, co-directors of the Adventure Syndicate. And she was the fastest woman to cycle around the world recently. She's really good. Yeah, I love her. I love her sort of attitude. She's a very amazing person. She has a wonderful voice as well. Mm. So before I interviewed her, I listened to... She did these kind of audio postcards for the BBC, which were wonderful. And so it's just her in a tent sort of saying, oh, this is what I've done today. I got stopped at a checkpoint and turns out they just wanted selfies with me. And then we were trying to like talk to each other, but we didn't speak each other's language. So we're doing charades. And she's just wonderful. And yeah, and the way she talks about the landscape, and she saw a bear and she was really scared, but she's like pedaling away and singing on the road as she's cycling. And yeah, she just did this amazing thing and is just an awesome person. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I get to speak to some inspiring people.
Mm. And then some clunkers.
Yeah. Any?
Can you share any interviews that have gone wrong?
Oh, so, well, I think the most embarrassing one. So I interviewed the woman who lost her leg when she and the lorry collided on Old Street. And a friend of hers contacted me asking if I wanted an interview. And so I contacted the Sunday Times and the journalist there. He's now moved to the Mail on Sunday, Mark Hookham, who's very good. He came along with me, thankfully, to do this interview with her. And she is incredible. It was only a short time after the crash. And so she's still in hospital. And we interviewed her, and he had done a lot of war reporting as well, because he is sort of defence and transport correspondent, so he did a lot of the questions and was very good, and I was quite glad to let him sort of lead, because I don't have as much experience on this. Anyway, so we both recorded, or so I thought we did. And then it was very sort of intense, because she remembers everything about this collision, and it was, you know, beyond traumatic, obviously, and she almost didn't make it, and it was really... the medics just couldn't believe that she survived it, basically. They were absolutely astounded that she's still alive and smiling and just, yeah, amazing. Anyway, so we had this interview and it was full on and she was amazing. And then we left and I looked down at my phone and it hadn't recorded the interview. But luckily, Mark had recorded it, so... Yeah, very, extremely embarrassing, and potentially it could have been very bad if he hadn't been with me. So yeah, we make mistakes sometimes. That was a bad one.
I've
got an app on my phone, and I didn't want to be looking at my phone, you know, in the interview, because it looks incredibly rude. I wanted to check, but I was like, oh, I'm not really sure. Next time I do something of that importance, then I will dig out my old dictaphone, and
it looks cooler.
Yeah, it does actually.
Than like someone waving a phone
waving
in front
phone.
Of you.
Yeah, exactly.
When you get a cassette tape out and you have to rewind it.
Okay. Hang on, I gotta flip the tape now.
Go, yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Let's talk about bikes.
Oh,
how many bikes do you have?
How many bikes do I have?
How many?
I've got quite a lot of bikes.
I've got...
You're amongst friends.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's okay.
It's cool. I mean... I used to have 7. It's cool.
Okay.
How many have you got, Jenny?
4 working.
Yeah.
Do you feel better? So, okay, yeah, I've got 6 bikes. I don't ride all of them, obviously.
At once.
I'm not a spider.
Double day. With a stick.
Oh, my God.
Cars will give you room then.
You could make
take
a massive
lane.
Go past. Yeah. It's actually amazing if you're riding something like non-stand. I borrow a friend's cargo bike sometimes to move stuff around because he lives near me. And, yeah, it's great. People just give you loads of room or... Yeah. Yeah, I was carrying 2 rucksacks, one on the front, one on the back. And anyway, yeah, if you're carrying loads of bikes, then, yeah, people give you room. So, yeah, 6 bikes. So that's quite a lot of bikes. I need to get rid of a couple of them, actually. I don't really ride them. I've just dug out a road bike that I haven't ridden for a couple of years. I've got this, like, I don't really do road riding anymore. Just the traffic's annoying. Yeah, I quite like to do, you know, my N+1 would be, like, a gravel bike. I'd probably get rid of a couple of bikes and do, like, a kind of off-roady touring
I like that
hashtag growed.
But it's so fun. I did the Dorset gravel dash last year and that was amazing. It's just not, you know, just riding through the countryside, it's incredible, going through puddles, getting covered in mud, going down rocky hills. You don't have to worry about cars, traffic. Brilliant.
It's a dream.
To camp out. It's amazing. That's the kind of cycling you want to do these days.
So what are you riding in your collection? What have you got?
So I've got my trusty old hybrid bike, which I must have had for 10 years now. It's just like a very bog standard hybrid that you just can't break. It's also my touring bike. It weighs a ton. It's got a lot of metal on it. So you can put loads of weight on and it doesn't mind.
I don't name things.
I'm not a namer.
Because they get stolen. Really?
Yeah.
What are you yours called?
Some people do.
I name my bikes. That's what fine. Are they called?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Is this new information for me?
I rode in...
You want to lose?
The bike I built in the book I wrote, How to Build a Bike, is Foxy Brown. My tank that I ride to work every day is Debbie. Mm-hmm. And my Ison is... It's not a very good name if I can't remember it. I haven't ridden the Ison in so long, but...
Yeah, we rode it last week. You don't remember.
No.
Oh.
I just built up my mountain bike. That doesn't have a name yet. I have a feeling it's something like Bruce, but it has to tell me its name.
Okay.
The Ison's name is Barbarella.
Barbarella?
Yeah.
That's a good name.
Yeah.
And so how do you get the name off them? Do you, like, hit them with a tuning fork?
No,
and
no.
Listen to the
just,
sound that comes out?
As you're riding.
Bong.
Yeah.
No, just
you're
as you're riding, something just appears. Like a vision. You and the bike have fused as one. And it's like telekinesis. We talk to each other. It tells me its name when it's ready to be revealed. So it took a while. It took a while for Debbie to reveal her name to me. I think she's quite shy.
Like a bike whisperer.
Debbie is almost onomatopoeic, isn't it? Because you can imagine it making that noise. If you've got something a bit makes a ding noise. Yeah, if you're like...
Debbie.
Yeah. Riding on something gravelly path. And then something's also tinging. Ding, ding, ding. Debbie.
I'm waiting for the mountain bike, but I'm getting a Bruce. I'm channeling Bruce right now.
Yeah.
So maybe it might
be Bruce. That's like the whoosh of air past
spruce,
your ears.
Spruce trees.
Bruce.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. What other bikes?
Yeah. I've got a road bike that I use for commuting. Sturdy old trusty bike. Then I have a carbon road bike, which I haven't ridden for a while. I got it out the shed and I washed the cobwebs off. And it's amazing. I took it for a ride last night. I'm taking it to the Etap Loch Ness next weekend. So I was just checking that I could still ride the bike. And I can put the old Clippy pedals on.
Clippy.
I know all of the terminology. So,
Clippy
clipped
pedals.
In. Didn't fall off. Good. Can still do that. So, yeah, I was like, wow, this bike's amazing. Why don't I ride this? But it's because you can't put a pannier wrap on it. Like, I'm a utility, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so do you no longer own an e-bike?
Oh, so the e-bike isn't mine. I've borrowed it long-term. It's a long-term loan. Yeah, the e-bike. So it was lent to me. It's like an experiment, really. So I'm seeing what it's like to have one, what it kind of does as a cyclist already, and also what the potential is for like other people to use e-bikes. Because I think it's an interesting idea, the e-bike. I think it's kind of, well, there's, yeah, I think it's potentially future. Quite transformational.
Future.
Yeah, it is, though. If you're looking at like people who want to get out of their cars and they maybe don't feel like they're very fit, or they've got like knee issues, maybe.
Got a long journey to work.
Or if they've got a long journey to work. Yeah, so I first got this e-bike. I did like a 20-mile round trip to the theatre, and I wore my heels and a dress, which I couldn't have done, you know, 20 miles across town. And I'm lucky enough to live at the end of one of the cycle superhighways. And so it was basically cycle route all the way there. It was amazing. And I was just thinking as I was riding along, this is like a massive game changer. I can imagine just anyone, you know, with the routes in place, safe routes, and then how easy this thing is. You know, you can just turn it right up. You're just putting a bit of light pressure on the pedals. You're still moving. And then you just whoosh off to the theatre, and then you can come back and you don't smell of BO in the theatre, which is great for everyone else.
And yourself.
And for yourself, yeah.
No, that's only bad when you can smell yourself.
Oh, God, yeah. And you're like, oh, my God,
point.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't get it when it's subtle.
I think it's okay, though. Usually, sometimes I'll check with people. I'm like, can you smell me?
Yeah.
And they're like, no. That's and I'm good, like, yeah. All right, it's just me. I'm really... like
sensitive
keyed in yeah. on my own scent and yeah it's a bit yeah. strong right now but
yeah
how have the reactions from other cyclists been?
So one night I was riding home. It was very sweet. I saw this guy and I saw him checking out the battery on the bike, and I was looking at his battery, and we were like, he's like an older guy. It was really funny, though. It could have been like checking each other out, but we weren't. We were looking at each other's bikes, and he wasn't my type. He's a bit old. Anyway, so we're riding along, and we're on the CS2, the cycle superhighway, and we are stopping at the lights together, and we go on a bit, and then we stop at the lights. And eventually I was like, oh, how's your e-bike? Because one of my new favourite things is just talking to strangers. And it's amazing. People, you just say something to someone, and I don't know if I have one of those faces that people will just talk to me. But, yeah, people will really open up. So we were just riding along side by side. And so he told me that he had lost like an enormous amount of weight through bariatric surgery because he'd been very overweight. And he used to motorbike into work. And it was something like a really long commute. I want to say between 15 and 20 miles each way.
Wow.
And he'd been mopeding, and he knew that once he'd lost this weight, he had to keep it off. And so he needed to change something in his life. And so he got this e-bike and was using it every day. And he said it's a little bit longer, but not much. It's only like, there was only like 10, 15 minutes in it. It was quite amazing, really. And so he's doing that instead, and he loves it. And he said it's like, yeah, it's brilliant. And we got, well, I turned off at just after Stratford, and he was only halfway home at that point. So, yeah, that was amazing. And, yeah, it's nice, actually. Yeah, other people with e-bikes talk to you. I took an e-mountain bike. I borrowed an e-mountain bike from Canyon.
Wow.
Just before Easter, I did the Caledonia Way, most of that on this e-bike. And I was riding through Edinburgh, and I saw another guy on an e-mountain bike. And I was like, I hadn't really used it very much. And so I was like pedaling along, and it's really hilly in Edinburgh, so it's like quite a smug feeling just to like put it on turbo and off you go. Anyways, another guy on an e-mountain bike, and I was like, he was on the other side of the road, like we were going the same direction, but he was in like a different lane, and I was like, e-mountain bike, brilliant. And he's like, yeah, best thing ever.
Oh, it's so lame, it's so cute, I love it.
I mean, for me, it was all brilliant. I was just like, yeah, I just loved how enthusiastic he was about this thing. And I was like, I know, it's great, isn't it? So we're just riding along, and I was like, bye. He's like, bye. So that's me now. Oh. I mean, when I'm going along on the bike or on foot. And yeah, when I was doing riding across the Caledonia Way, I'm just like talking to everyone. I was just like, hi, how's it going? Or like just make a remark about something. It's amazing. I found that in the States, people do this. People will just tell you like their life story. And I thought, how amazing is this? I was there a couple of years ago for like a month, and I just loved how open people are. And I thought, this would be so cool. I'm getting so many amazing stories from people. Just, you know, just say hi to someone and they'll just be like, oh, I did this thing and then this other thing happened and then I didn't speak to my dad for like years. And then, I don't know, it was just like, wow, it's like really sort of personal stuff, but also very cool. You really feel like you're connecting with. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to try it here in the UK. And amazingly, even in London, I find that people will like talk to you if you say stuff to them.
People want to chat.
People do,
most of the time people want to chat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do find sometimes at the lights, people just want to say hi, or
yeah,
I do the nod.
The
or sometimes
nod, yeah.
I do a wave.
Yeah. There was a guy the other day also on CS2. I'm like just riding along. You're not really doing much. You're just cycling, and so I feel like cycling and chatting. It's like a bonus. So I was looking at this guy, and I was trying to work out if he would want to chat. There was a guy on an e-scooter behind us, and he was like looking at me weirdly if I got eye contact, and I was like, okay, he clearly does not want anything to do with this. So anyway, this guy on a mountain bike, and he had like all this gear on. I was like, oh, have you been mountain biking? And he said no. He'd basically cycled from like Kingston all the way over to the West Ham stadium to help referee an over 60s football match, like a walking football match, which is like a fun community thing that he does. And he cycled all the way there, and then he cycled all the way back across town. And that's a bloody long way.
That's a long way.
Yeah, and he's training for the Ride Across Britain, which I'm also doing this year in September. And so he's just using it as training and then doing this awesome thing for these people, refereeing their football match and then just cycling home again.
Oh,
so nice.
That's so nice.
He's just a dude on a mountain bike with like a load of bright clothes on, and then that's what he's up to. So yeah, we got chatting. We were just chatting for ages. And I turned off and we're like, bye.
Chat the lights, everybody.
Maybe see you
chat
in September.
The lights.
E-bikes bringing people together.
Ooh,
it's
yes.
Another unexpected bonus.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about Lindy Hopper?
Yeah.
And now.
And now for something completely different.
Yes.
And I'm going to do my jazz hands and do the Charleston in these very small booths.
Whoa.
So Lindy hopping, a very fun hobby. Got quite into it for a while. I've been doing it for about 10 years. God, yeah, Lindy hopping's brilliant. So if you haven't tried it, I'd recommend it. It's a bit like a cult, but not.
It does look like it from the outside.
Yeah,
because
I
do know a few other people that do, and I'm like,
yeah.
You go on your little holidays.
Oh,
and
yeah,
wear your outfits.
Swing
and
camps, yeah. Which could sound, yeah, swing dancing camps. So, yeah, there's like swing dancing camps around the world every weekend. There's like multiple ones. You can go anywhere around the world. And then you do classes and you do social dancing, and you like basically have this like intense swing dancing experience. But it's very cool because by the end of the weekend, you're kind of in this sort of slightly over, well, very overtired, extremely overtired, I would hazard, state. And then the dancing just becomes amazing. And there's a thing called the flow state, which can happen in anything that you practice and you get better at, where you start to do new stuff and you're kind of at the edge of your ability, and you start to, and Lindy hopping is very kind of improvisational. It was a street dance from the 1930s from Harlem in New York. And it was kind of forged on the dance floors of the Savoy Hotel. And so it's got this very wonderful expressiveness, and it's like communication between partners, and it's wonderful because you're very, for me, it's very kind of instinctive. And once you've learned the steps and you've learned different kind of patterns, and you can just switch off your brain and your body, just you're sort of communicating with your partner, it's lead and follow, and then you just, stuff just happens. Well, that's how it works for me anyway. And I got really into it for a while. I was in dance troupes, we performances, I was in an all girls chorus line dance troupe. We won the European Swing Dance Championships in, I think, 2013. I'm a lot less committed to it nowadays, but I still...
Less hopping about Lindy.
Yeah.
God.
Sorry.
I know some other Lindy hoppers in the bike scene. Judith from Stayer Cycles.
Oh, yeah.
So she's our...
Oh, does she do it?
She's our wheel building instructor and is an avid Lindy hopper. And you know who else? Chris King.
Oh, yes. You heard it here first. I did not know that.
He makes the headsets and bottom brackets.
Right.
I had a good chat with him at the Bespoke show a few years ago.
So did I, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was thinking,
were you
there
at the show?
Yes. The one in Bristol.
You should have gone to dance with him.
Oh,
because
my goodness,
he looked so bored.
That.
He looked incredible. He's like, I don't want to talk about bottom brackets or headsets anymore. Let's talk Lindy Hop. And that's all we talked about.
That's amazing. I feel like we should, cool. Chris King and I, we should like, yeah, maybe next time. Maybe next time I'll ask him to dance. I'll bring my playlist and we'll like have a little, that'll be amazing.
That's cool.
Two worlds collide.
Bikes and Lindy Hop. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks for that. All right.
Yes.
Beautiful.
At the beginning, it was like quite serious.
It's fine.
That's cool. That's good.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you like what we do, squish that like button, rate us on iTunes, and subscribe. If you can't give us your money, give us your stars. And don't keep us a secret. Shh. Slam that share button and tell your friends about our show.